All right. Welcome to the bookstore.
It's like a book club, but we actually read the book.
I'm Becca.
And I'm Corinne. And this week we will be discussing volumes 1 and 2 of Persepolis, which was written and illustrated by Marjane Satrapi. I realize that I've been saying Marjane wrong for like the last 3 weeks as we've been announcing this. So apologies to Marjane. That was my fault.
Yeah, me too. I always only think of looking up pronunciations.
Like as it's happening. Yeah.
I also pronounce pronunciation wrong. I know it's pronunciation, but pronunciation sounds better. It sounds more correct.
That's how it looks like it should be said. Pronunciation. I've got that figured out now. Before we get started, we did get an email from a listener, so I'll read that now. It's from Pam.
Okay.
Pam says, I hate talking on the phone, but wanted to let you know that I love the podcast. Last year, I thought you did an outstanding job with An American Marriage, one of my favorite books of last year, and The Perfect Nanny. Several years ago, I tried to read The Transit of Venus and had to put it down without finishing. So I was super excited to hear that it did pose some difficulties for the both of you. It wasn't just me. Yay. On the other hand, you filled in enough blanks, so now I don't have to feel guilty about not going back and trying again. So thank you for that. Finally, I read The Wedding along with you. I too liked it a lot, and your discussion illuminated some points for me. One thing I thought of after you mentioned how Addie Bannister shows up briefly and then is never heard from again is that, to me, she sort of paralleled Amy Norton. Both of them ended up in diminished financial straits at the end of their lives, and both of their houses ended up with men, Lute and Clark, who in very different ways left their marks on the over without either woman realizing the significance their homes had on the people of the neighborhood. Again, thoroughly enjoying the podcast. Thanks so much for all the effort you put in to make it so good. Thank you very much, Pam. It was nice.
Yes, to say. Definitely. First of all, thank you very much. Yes. It's so nice to get compliments. You have no idea. Also, it really makes me, I'm the same, it makes me so happy when I struggle with a book to hear that other people struggled with it too. Especially since, you know, like you mentioned on the podcast, reading the reviews on Goodreads, everyone is like, this is incredible. So yeah, it's very nice to know that we are not alone.
Yeah, and to Pam's point about Amy Norton, who's, we didn't mention her too much in the episode, but her name is Amy Norton Norton, thanks to like the marriage of two third cousins or something like that, which I thought was very funny. But also, I think that's a really good point because, yeah, both of them were spinsters, and you know, it kind of just shows basically like that their legacy does matter, but also it kind of gets overshadowed by other people and other, and like men specifically. So I think that's a really interesting point to draw attention to.
It is, especially since, I mean, I can't remember about Addie Bannister, but with Amy Norton, she was single.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, and in the end, Addie Bannister was definitely single. So it's kind of like, you know, even then, it's a man who takes over.
Addie didn't marry, because, and that's why she was so excited to see one of the girls get married at the
Oval. Okay, that's what it was, yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point, and definitely one I wouldn't have even considered, right. But makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
But yeah, thanks again for writing. We love to hear from you. If you want to write us an email or give us a call, send us a voice memo, whatever, you can do that, thebookstorepodcast@gmail.com, or you can find our phone number on the website. It is, I think, 616-730-1656. I'll fix that if it's wrong. Okay. I guess we could get started talking about Persepolis.
Persepolis is a graphic novel, 2 volumes, that we both had in our possession, so we decided to read it as another read for our what do we even call it anything?
No, we didn't really have a name.
Backlist January.
Or unread books that we own. All these are really glamorous and graceful titles that we've come up with.
Both volumes were created by Marjane Satrapi. They were first published in French in 2000. The U.S. English editions were published by Pantheon Books in 2003 and 2004, and the comics were adapted as an animated film that was nominated for an Academy Award in 2007. Persepolis was an ancient city, and it means the city of Persians, per Wikipedia, just to let you know what the title means. It's an autobiographical graphic novel following Marjan throughout school and into university. Marjan grows up an only child during the Islamic Revolution in the 1970s in Iran. Her parents are not really religious. They seem to be fairly lenient, so she's able to consume Western media that might be forbidden to other Iranians. She is unafraid to share her opinions about the new fundamentalist government in Iran, which does lead to her getting in trouble often at school. During the Iraq-Iran war, Marjan's parents send her to live with her mother's friend in Austria because they fear for her safety. There's like bombings going on in Tehran where they live. She goes to a French school in Austria and falls in with some very avant-garde friends. She doesn't have a great time in Austria, and she even ends up being homeless at one point. After 4 years in Austria, she returns home to Iran. There, she meets the man who she will eventually marry. She goes to university, same university as her boyfriend, eventual husband. All the while, Iran is getting more and more strict with rules for conduct for everybody, but I think especially women is what the graphic novel deals with, because Marjan's a woman. After a lot of soul searching, Marjan gets a divorce and prepares to move to France. And that's pretty much where it ends.
Yeah, so I have had this book for maybe like close to 10 years now, or these books, I suppose. And I hadn't read them. I first became aware of them, I think, when it was like made into a film in 2007. I guess they weren't exactly what I expected them to be. Like, what did you go into this thinking it was going to be, and like, how were your expectations met, or like, what did you feel about that?
I would say it kind of was what I expected it to be. Like, not, I didn't really think about it too much, but I first heard of it probably when I worked at the bookstore. I think I bought a used copy of volume one and then bought the second one some years later, but of course never read it. But I did see like the trailer of the movie. Mm-hmm. So I guess it just wasn't that far off. Like, it was a graphic novel memoir.
Right. For me, it was just more like, I don't know if I expected more of it to be like specifically about Iran and the conflicts and that stuff. But a lot of it obviously was about her life, because it's a memoir. And then I guess I didn't expect her to leave the country for such a long period of time. So I was surprised by that.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And I didn't realize, I don't know if this is so much that I didn't realize it would be about so much of the kind of modern history of Iran, as much as I was surprised, I don't even know if I want to say surprised, at how much history there is.
Yeah.
And how little I know about it. I thought I had a really vague idea of what was going on, but it turns out to be like so much more complicated than I imagined. And it was really heavy on the history. Like, I would say it's about half and half her kind of story of what she's doing, and just kind of her telling what's happening in Iran at the time.
I think I disagree with you.
Really?
Yeah, I felt like there was almost no history. I don't know. It's weird. I mean, like, there would be parts where it was like fairly heavy, but then it would go on for such a long time, like just about what she was doing with friends. I think the first book was more about the history, I guess. And then maybe because I've so much more recently read the second one, which does get more into like the more modern history of it, like in the later part of it. But even that wasn't like, it didn't seem like a whole lot. I don't know.
Yeah. And it could just be that I was more interested in the history parts, so I just paid more attention to those parts.
Yeah.
Too.
I mean, I think maybe
it could very well be.
I also I was expecting it to like fill in something for me about the history that I didn't know. Yeah. So I think maybe I was also sort of frustrated by that, because I felt like it. I felt maybe like I was confused by certain things because I didn't have like all of the context and all of the information that I wanted, which is like a lot to ask of a book. So,
well, I agree with that, though. I do agree with that because I think there was a lot of times where they were talking about the history, people were talking about it, and she was showing like her experiences with it, and it was, but there wasn't very much concrete information about it. Because here's the thing, this is like embarrassing for me to admit, but I'm going to. I forgot, or I never knew in the first place, that there was a war between Iraq and Iran. I feel like very little, like I might have known that it happened, but I had no idea what time period it was or anything like that.
Yeah, the 1970s and that through like out that region, you know, you've got like Afghanistan fairly nearby and there was like the conflict with Russia there too. So I think it was like a really, like the whole period was pretty tumultuous for that area. So I'm only saying this in like the vaguest terms because I still don't really understand exactly what goes on there because I got like the standard American like elementary to high school history of the world, which is like very American centric. So we don't focus on much else. So yeah. I mean, I don't think you have to feel like ashamed about that. It's not like it's something that was covered often in our schools. So, you know, it is interesting to get like this history from a graphic novel, though. So that's kind of cool.
Switching gears a little bit, her illustrations are all just black and white. And I've read them described as either simplistic or minimalist. And I kind of prefer minimalist because simplistic, like, I don't know, that doesn't sound very nice, I guess. But what did you think about her art style?
I like the contrast of just black and white and like no grayscale in there. I think that's pretty cool and like very graphic. It kind of reminds me of like woodblock printings, which I'm always interested in. I can't say that like for as many panels as you get like on a single page usually that it was super effective for me. Sometimes it was hard for me to tell who was who in certain things, especially when they're in Iran and like all of the women are wearing veils. It was kind of difficult because like people's shapes and stuff kind of varied from like frame to frame. So it was sometimes difficult to tell who was who. And that kind of posed some problems for me. But overall, it wasn't like a deal breaker or anything like that.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same. And I wonder if that's maybe a little bit of the point Satrapi was making, that the veils and the way they're supposed to dress all is kind of supposed to make them look shapeless. But it is kind of hard to follow the story. And the times where I liked the illustrations the best were times where she was doing something a little bit funny, like towards the beginning of the probably in one of the first pages of the first volume, she's like laying on the couch and her dad is telling her the story of, I think, her uncle. And then her mom comes in and then she like turns to look at her mom and it just looks really funny because it's so, she's just, it looks almost like not a stick figure, but almost like that, but just her head is turned on the couch.
Yeah.
And it just looks really funny. And it reminds me of how kids will lie down and like looks like the most uncomfortable positions. Right. But for some reason, they're comfortable. Yeah.
I liked the times where she would do like a full page illustration of something, because I think like they would get kind of abstract and interesting there, or like where it would repeat like a whole crowd. I always thought those were kind of cool too. Yeah, the frames were very small and like also very text heavy. So that was sometimes like a little difficult for me. But at the same time, she's got a lot to get across in not a whole lot of space. So it works.
Yeah, I do think that was probably a little bit, maybe where sort of the confusion and the history comes into play, because she's partially trying to relate the entire history to people who might not know about it at all, but also tell her story and make it kind of a coming of age thing too. I don't know. So there was a lot to pack in.
It really was.
Sometimes it did get a little confusing.
And I also think like sometimes it, seemed really abrupt. And I don't know if that was like translations, and not just abrupt, but like maybe a little, I don't know, like I'm trying to think of like the right way to say it. But like there were a lot of times when she would cry and they would write in, like it would be written in as boo hoo, which kind of took like a lot of the emotion away from it and like distanced me from that, because mm-hmm. boo hoo here is like very sarcastic. So I think like some of those things kind of got in the way for me to feel, to really connect with the book emotionally.
One last thing that I thought was cool with the art style is when she draws herself going through puberty. Yes. And it's just like her face, yeah. mostly, I think. I thought that was cool. I don't really understand how you can randomly grow a mole. Like, that's what she was saying, right? She grew a beauty yeah. mark on the side of her nose. But it did also help in subsequent pages to tell who was Marjan right. and who was somebody else, because I just looked for the mole.
Yeah. Yeah, it's difficult. Like, if everybody in the frame has dark hair, and because the frames are small, and like, you know, if it's trying to pack a whole bunch of people in, it's hard to identify who is who when everybody mm-hmm. is drawn just like in stark black and white. I think she had like a lot of fun with like some of the frames, like when like a person has two faces or whatever, you know, like they're doing so much all at once. I always thought that was kind of fun.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. I feel a bit odd talking about like her parents and her family, because this is her real parents and her real family. Yeah. So it feels odd for me to say I really liked her parents and her grandmother and how supportive they were, because that's how they really were. Yeah. But I did like that. I think I've said before, sometimes it gets old. Not old. Ooh, that's the wrong word. Sometimes it gets like a little hard to constantly read people who have terrible family dynamics. And so occasionally it's just nice, like a relief to see somebody who has a great relationship with their parents.
Yeah, it's nice to read about people who are nice. And I liked her parents a lot. I thought it was, I don't know, it's one of those things that I obviously try not to have like too many preconceived notions about different parts of the world, because I know I should know better than that, obviously. But also mm-hmm. when you're trying to like get a concept of the world, it's hard to think like super complexly about everything always. But it was a good reminder of what Iran is like, because I think between the media and then also like the last 20 years of American history, there's been a specific caricature drawn of people from the Middle East in mm-hmm. that part of Asia specifically. So like you see like that they were very like cosmopolitan, and they spoke French, and you know, like they're like people in any other part of the world, really. Like they've got a lot of interests and culture, obviously, because that's how mm-hmm. human beings are. But it's good to have that representation for people from Iran, especially.
Yeah, well, and they were more like what I said, like lenient, and they listened to the music. Marjan mentions they listened to like Pink Floyd and stuff. And just she was allowed to watch anything and read anything. Like, in a lot of ways, they're way more progressive than my parents and people that I grew up right. with. You know, so it just is kind of like, even in a country that we think of as like so repressive, there's not every single person is going to be that stereotype right. of the country.
Yeah, so since you brought up her parents, obviously this is it's a coming of age story, and it's also wrapped up with like, I mean, not wrapped up necessarily, but like the background of it is this modern history of Iran. How did you think those two things worked together?
This is a hard one, because I am like you, and I wanted more information about the history and what was going on, and what are the details, what are the politics right. like at the time. And I think those topics were mentioned a lot, they just weren't gone into detail a lot. And then it was also confusing, because also, like you said, there would be pages of her just smoking cigarettes
yeah.
and hanging out with her friends and not really doing anything. So I like having the two together, but I also, it didn't always flow very nicely.
I It felt very segmented. The chapters, they were, I guess, maybe like too self-contained, where I'd reach the end of one and it would sort of just like wrap up like a whole topic, where I feel like maybe if it had been carried across more, I would have felt, I don't know, it would have felt more complete, I guess, because sometimes and this is true for how children are anyway, like, but it did feel like there were so many different ideas of her, like, as a kid, like the one who's like reading all of these like communist philosophies and stuff, but then like also and I just didn't get it, like the kid who wants to be like super faithful to her parents, but then also she's kind of mean to her parents, but then also she's like doing really well in school, but also she's yelling at her teachers and getting expelled. Like, for some reason, like, something about it didn't feel complete, or I don't know, and maybe that's just a function of like how she sees herself as a person too. So that could be my me trying to impose like what I think of a narrative on top of like what a person thinks of herself, and that's unfair.
Yeah, I can see that, and I can also see, because towards the end, almost at the end, she decides to get a divorce, I think it's immediately after she gets married, she realizes this was a mistake. I'm 21 years old and I'm married. I never wanted to be this. And that sort of feels like her whole life is, like you said, with doing well in school, but also yelling at her teachers. Like, she has sex before marriage, which is very rare for Iranian women. But yet she gets married very young.
Yeah.
It just feels like a push and pull. And maybe that's kind of, and I guess maybe that could be kind of the theme of the whole thing. Like, she did spend a lot of time in Austria. So in like the West.
Yeah, in a permissive culture, and then one that's much more conservative. So yeah, I think a good point. And yeah, it could be, I don't know, I expected to like it a whole lot more than I actually did. And that could just be me, or it could just be wasn't the right time for reading it. But it is at least a good thing to talk to someone about, you know, like get other ideas on it and stuff like that.
Yeah, I think for me, I would have liked it a lot more if I read it years ago. I really loved the idea, like I seen, I think it's in the trailer for the movie, but she's wearing like a Punk's Not Dead shirt, and then there's two people with headscarves like yelling at her, and I really love that, and I like the idea of like youth rebellion. But I mean, this makes me sound so old and cranky, but it did make me nervous when she yelled at people, or when she like went off by herself. Yeah. And I completely understand the need for freedom, and the fact that she grew up in a permissive household, progressive, you know, and then now all of a sudden she's getting everything taken away. So I totally understand that. But like, my immediate reaction is like, what are you doing? Be careful, please.
We're old now.
Yes. Her grandma was great.
Her grandma was great.
And I can't really imagine being her grandma, because it was, this is also a really funny panel, is when they first get the veils, they're like, there's a big panel of all the crazy things these kids are doing with the veils. And one of them is like riding another one as a horse. But it must be so weird for her as a kid to go from, you can do whatever you want, to, nope, now you have to dress like this and be like this. But for her grandma, it must be like so much stranger to grow up and live through all of these regime changes.
Yeah. Yeah. And like their family too, I mean, we haven't really talked about that, but like was related to the man who had been is the emperor the right word? Did they use emperor?
I think so. Yeah. I really didn't understand that part, to be honest.
Yeah. So, they had at least been related to somebody who had been like the ruler of Iran, which she didn't realize because she was born after that regime had fallen. But so that's really crazy too. And then like to have your family know people who are revolutionaries or, you know, socialist like activists and that sort of thing, and like getting imprisoned and everything. That's a very like powerful situation to find yourself in, I would think. So that's all very interesting. There's a lot going on in it, and I wish that I had been able to get a little bit more of it, I think, just for more context and that sort of thing.
Yeah. And that too, what I want more context in the parents. Her parents seem to be supportive of the communist or the socialist, but they had a housekeeper.
Yeah.
Who didn't eat with them. And it's mentioned at one point, I think she lives in a sort of bad part of town.
Yeah.
And of course, my first thought is, so how much were they paying her?
Yeah.
And that wasn't really gone into very much. And I thought that was interesting. And obviously, she can't go into everything. But it does kind of beg the question of what are socialists doing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think she brings that up too, right? Like when she was a kid, mm-hmm. and she was mad that had a Cadillac and that they had all of these things and when other people didn't.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah.
And that is, no, I think that's a good point. Do you get like these kind of like intelligent elite people like within a political party, and it doesn't kind of match up with what they claim that their ideals are. So that is kind of a weird situation too. I mean, and I'm not saying that to call them out, because the same thing is true here.
Yeah. And we don't know what conversations she actually had right. with her parents. All we know is what she wrote down. Right. So that's all we're talking yeah. about.
It's very scary to also, since we were talking about like the day they had to switch over to veils and like when they couldn't go to school with boys anymore and all of that, like is very weird and scary to watch like those changes happen. It seems slowly, but it's also very fast, but also like seemingly there was no stopping it. And that's kind of terrifying.
I did think it was really weird and completely out of character for Marjan when she accused some guy.
Oh, yes.
Of basically a cat calling her, I would say, or something like that, because she didn't want the, I don't know what they were exactly,
police. Guardians, I think she called them.
Kind of thing. Yeah, moral guardians, to get mad at her for wearing lipstick. And it kind of alarmed me. She laughed about it. Then her boyfriend laughed about it. And then she told her grandma, and her grandma was upset. And then she only seemed to be upset because her grandma was upset.
Right.
She didn't ever seem actually sorry for what she did. And I guess that's partly because probably getting taken in by the moral guardians became such a normal part of life right. for people that she didn't realize it was that she didn't think it was that serious. You just pay the fee and then you get out. But to me, I'm like, well, not everybody can pay the fee, and you shouldn't go accusing people.
Right.
Anyways.
Right. Yeah. And I think there were a couple of things in the book too that like also made me a little bit uncomfortable, because she seemed to be like incredibly mean-spirited about some folks. And I think maybe it's mm-hmm. like partially, you know, like looking back, like her landlady was very mean to her, and like accused her of stealing and stuff.
Yeah.
But like calling her a big yeah. fat horse lady was also like,
yeah.
like from the start seemed very mean spirited, even if I would support yeah, like, her doing that after the woman accused her of stealing. But
it's fine to insult the lady's tea.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't like the tea, you don't like the tea. But insulting her appearance was a bit much. But in that, I do appreciate that Satrapi was honest about herself.
Yeah.
She wasn't going to go back and make herself be this perfect person.
Right. That's a good
point. So I guess that was a good reason for her to include that stuff.
I think it's just funny how much I've...
Everybody's flawed.
It's kind of funny how much I've changed, because like I used to have, I guess, maybe fewer qualms about like making fun of people, but now I get like mad and like, that's very mean about this and that.
I know.
When the woman was awful and racist. So, yeah. Not that I'm defending her, because, again, I do support her calling her mean things after we found out she was racist.
Yeah.
It was just before.
After she was a horrible person. Well, it was just jarring,
yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
Like, what you were talking about is sometimes you couldn't quite figure out who Marjan was. And that was one of the times where I'll just say all the guys wearing mustaches was very cool.
It was great. My dad had a mustache always. So I'm a big fan of mustaches, even though everyone thinks they're creepy now. So
I did like the punk rockers, too, how she drew them. It just her style, like lended itself very well to drawing those kind of like goth and punks.
Yeah, Daria a little bit, like the hairstyles being kind of like incomprehensible. But like get the point across really well. Oh, Aldi. She shouts out Aldi and it like it's like explained as a German grocery store, which I think is great, mainly because I know what Aldi is and I love Aldi. It's the best. Buy all your groceries at Aldi. So they're not sponsoring the podcast,
yes,
by the way.
That's
just a life.
That I thought was really funny because there's Aldi. I didn't know that it wasn't just a even just like a Michigan thing or American thing, because there's ones in Australia for sure. I would go to Aldi there. Yeah. So I don't know. It's fun.
I know.
Supposedly they pay really well.
Yeah, they do.
Cut that out. What am I talking about?
This is what I've heard. They do. And also like it's so efficient. There's not a million options for everything. Yes. And I love it. It's made my life so much easier.
And no plastic bags.
I love Aldi. I mean, like, there's the part in it where she says she, like, she was so bored while everyone was gone on Christmas vacation, and she was, like, alone in Vienna, so that, like, if she needed four things from the grocery store, she would go to the grocery store four different times just to, like, take up time. And I was like, that would be really hard at Aldi because, like, it's so fast.
Yeah.
So hard to spend a lot of time on.
Oh, there was one other funny thing about her time in Austria. All of her friends in Austria were the most stereotypical, like, 80s European teenagers. I feel like every sort of stereotype I had of, you know, when I was younger, that's how they were. Like, they were all too cool for everything, you know, just sat around and smoked.
They reminded me
talked philosophy
of the friends that my friend made when we were in high school, and they were like older than us a little bit and like went to different schools and stuff. And so then I became very self-conscious because they were clearly cooler than me, but like also at the same time, now looking back, I'm like, what a bunch of losers. Like standing around like acting like they know anything about philosophy and whatever. It's just so embarrassing to like look back on, but then also to try to get yourself in with them, and you're like so desperate to have them think that you're cool, and it's just all such like an insecure front for them too. So it was just, it was funny.
Teenagers, you're never as cool as you think you are.
No, I'm sorry,
but it's okay. Well, thanks for listening.
If you want to respond to anything you've heard here or tell us anything at all, you can find ways to contact us at our website. It is thebookstorepodcast.com. You can email us through it. You can find our phone number there. You can read short blog posts that I make for the episodes, which sometimes have extra media related to them, sometimes don't. I think Becca's got a fairly new blog post up there. Yeah. And also, it's been a little bit since we've said this, but if you like the podcast, if you wouldn't mind taking a moment to rate and review us in Apple Podcasts, that would be super helpful.
And we appreciate everybody who has already rated and reviewed
us.
Our next book discussion will be closing out our reading books that we have owned for a while but have never read. January.
We should come up with like an anagram for it or whatever.
And that will be The Garden Party and Other Stories by Catherine Mansfield. You can find it at your local bookstore or library and read along with us.
The Bookstore is a production of Awkwardly Social Media, produced by Becky Young and Corinne Keener, with production and technical support provided by Josh Bourdon.
And John, if you're out there, thanks for listening.
See you next Tuesday.
Bye. Bye. Pronunciation sounds better. It sounds more correct.